Calories are the fuel for the body's engine. When we consume more calories than the engine can burn, our bodies store the excess as fat. Clearly, we have been storing a lot of excess calories, and so we pause to ask, do the politics of calories make us fat?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Show with your host, Michael Olson. Now, get ready for an hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned into the 771st edition of the Food Chain right here on News Talk Radio. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends down there on Elias Kayas, who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio, with engineer Easton Allen on the boards. Hello, Easton.
Hello, Michael.
Folks, for a good long time, say about 250,000 years, the essential problem was to get enough calories into the body to survive. Over that course of time, the body developed a hunger for calories that carried it into modern times, where, in the blink of a historical eye, calories proliferated and became ubiquitous. True story here. Earlier this week, I stopped to have my car washed. While walking into the waiting room, I was greeted by a machine that sold a dozen different kinds of candy. And then at the cash register, I was offered chips, ice creams, and sodas. As there was a long line of cars waiting to be washed and so many calories beckoning to be consumed, I fled across the street to a car dealership where I was offered a donut. And then to a furniture store where I was confronted by a big plate of peanut butter cookies. Thus, instead of burning a few calories by washing my car, I had the opportunity to store away enough calories to sustain an army on its long march. Fortunately, I was thinking about this radio show at the time and was reading Marianne Nessel's Why Calories Count, and thus was aware of all the danger. But I wondered what would have happened to me had I instead been thinking about pruning the hedge or paying the bills. Would I have picked up one of those cookies or candies and some of those chips and a soda and maybe that donut? Or what about a peanut butter cookie or two or three? Well, what would my poor body have done with all those calories that I consumed without thinking that I had consumed them? Thankfully, I left the car wash with a clean car, an empty stomach, and the question, do politics have anything to do with making us fat? Well, here to help us come to grips with this question, we have somebody who should know, Marianne Nessel, who is a professor of sociology at New York University, author of Why Calories Count. Marianne, welcome back to the Food Chain.
Oh, glad to be here.
Hey, do you know,
after that terrific introduction.
Thank you. Do you know, it's been 10 years since we worked together, almost exactly 10 years since the last time you were on this radio program.
Good heavens.
And you've been writing and talking food ever since, as have I. How did we become such foodies, do you think?
Oh, it's just so, food is so good, and it tastes so good, and there's so much of it around, and everybody likes to eat, and it's become, I think, enormously popular to talk about, and the source of a whole new movement among young people, because it's something you can do something about, and it's very personal. Food is something you put in your body. People take it really personally. It's wonderful to study. It's wonderful to talk about. It relates to absolutely everything in society. I can't think of a single issue that faces modern society that food isn't related to in some way. And it's something that people can do something about on their own.
And, you know, when I first started doing this show, it was called the Saturday Morning Agriculture Show, and people would come up to me and say, hey, Olson, I like your show, but I don't have anything to do with agriculture.
Right.
Well, it's kind of funny, so I just changed the name to the Food Chain so nobody can get out of it. Nobody can get away from their food. And, you know, when we last talked almost exactly 10 years ago, the subject was your book, The Politics of Food. And now here 10 years later, you wrote a book called Why Calories Count. And in that, you have a section entitled The Politics of Calories. Tell us about politics and what they have to do with food, Marion.
Well, there isn't anything about food that isn't related to politics in some way, because food is an enormous business. In the United States, it accounts for more than $1 trillion in sales alone. That includes food, alcohol, restaurants, the whole works. But it's an enormous amount of money. Every single person in society eats multiple times a day, so it's something that everybody is involved with. And if you are in a business of selling food to the public, you want the costs of production to be really low. You want to maximize your profits. And that's where politics comes in, because the government is involved in what we eat.
Amen to that. And, well, then today we're talking about politics of calories. And calories are not essentially the same thing as food, or am I wrong there?
No. We need to eat for two reasons. One is the nutritional value of food, so that we get the nutrients that we need in order to build the parts of our body that we have to construct and replace. But we also need energy to drive those chemical reactions, and that's where the calories come in. And thinking about calories requires people to hold two ideas in their heads at the same time. One is that when it comes to body weight, calories count, and only calories count. The body couldn't care less where the sources of those energy come from. But from the standpoint of health, what you eat matters enormously.
That's
part of the confusion about calories.
In that regard, Marion Nessel, can one starve to death while being obese?
It would take a very, very long time to do that. If you look at, and there's been enormous amounts of research looking at how long people last if they don't eat anything at all, mm-hmm. except water. The Irish hunger, the people in the Irish hunger, the strikers in the Irish hunger issue in Ireland years ago, in concentration camps during the Second World War, there were lots of studies that looked at how long people lasted if they didn't eat anything at all.
I think I got you on the wrong track there. What I was trying to get at is this whole notion of an empty calorie. You talk about an empty calorie. Let's start with that.
Let me finish my thought.
Okay, go ahead.
Because I do think it's related.
All right.
And that is that if you're somebody of normal weight, you can last about 2 months eating nothing whatsoever. If you're an obese person who has a great deal of body fat, you can last as long as a year or more. So that in that sense, the amount of fat that you have is a store, but you also need body proteins and body carbohydrates and other kinds of things in order to keep yourself healthy. The issue of empty calories has to do with the calories in food. And when we eat food, we take in not only the energy that's stored in the molecules of protein, fat, and carbohydrate, but we also take in the vitamins and minerals and antioxidants and fiber that go along with it in the foods that we eat. If once the foods have been refined or processed, the nutrients go away and leave us with calories. And, of course, sugar is the best example of that and the most extreme example. It's got calories and nothing else.
And thus...
empty.
Yeah, empty calories.
And that's what we refer to as empty calories. Mm-hmm. So they're calories that don't have nutrients that accompany them in whatever it is we're eating.
Okay, then now let me lead you down this path of my question. If we consume an excess of calories, our body, of course, stores that excess as fat, correct?
Correct.
If we eat a lot of empty calories, which are, you know, calories without any nutrients in them, and we become excessively fat, but there are no nutrients for our body. And thus my question, I mean, can we get sick from a lack of nutrients even though we're obese or fat?
I think it would be hard to do because metabolism wouldn't work the same. I'm trying to think of a theoretical situation in which people were eating lots and lots of sugar and nothing else. So there wasn't any protein, and there wasn't, and there weren't any essential nutrients. Yes, you would get sick because you wouldn't be replacing the vitamins, minerals, fiber, and protein that you need. You need protein because there's certain amino acids that we can't make ourselves.
Right.
You need a source of nitrogen, amongst other things. So yes, you could make yourself sick if you just ate sugar.
And?
But fortunately, people get sick when they eat a lot of sugar. I mean, they don't want to eat it. So they want to eat other things. One of the things that were, I think, one of the reasons why we like eating so much is we love variety in food.
Amen to that. And we're gonna have to take a quick break, Marion. But when we come back, I'd like to talk with about how calories became so ubiquitous, so available. This is The Food Chain, Michael Olson with Marion Nestle, author, Why Calories Count. Right back. Do stay tuned.
Get this. The average acre of farmland in or near the city limits may earn in excess of $123,000 per year. To learn how so much can be earned from so little, pick up a copy of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for big profit on a small parcel of land. MetroFarm is the PMA Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner by Michael Olson that contains over 500 pages of photos, charts, checklists, illustrations, and in-depth interviews. MetroFarm will teach you how to develop a strategy, survey markets, select crops, organize business, establish production, prepare for market, and make the sale. MetroFarm will teach you how others just like you earn a good living by growing high-value specialty crops for people who are truly appreciative. Abraham Lincoln said, "The greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living from a small parcel of land." Get in on that future today. Pick up a copy of MetroFarm at bookstores, lawn and garden supply stores, 1-800-624-BOOK, or at www.metrofarm.com.
Well, folks, for 250,000 years, we hungered for calories because those calories were the fuel for the body's fire. And it was the fire that kept us going, that allowed us to move and groove in the world, out in the environment. And calories were hard to come by, so our body developed this hunger for them that we still have today. And we are hungry for them. And yet today, they are not hard to get. I was recently thinking about a story that my father told me about being on a ship in World War II and out in the Pacific for long stretches of time, and how the crew hungered for candy and ice cream and sweets. And I got to thinking about what things were like today, where those sweets and those candies and the ice cream, you can get them on almost every street corner. And you can get them at the car wash. My goodness, they're everywhere. So how on earth did these calories become so ubiquitous? Marion Nestle, author of Why Calories Count. I bet you can tell us.
Well, my hypothesis about it is that we didn't start overeating really until the early 1980s. And this can be traced quite, you know, if you look at rising rates of overweight in the population and the increase in calories in the food supply, both started in about the early 1980s. And that happened as a result of a bunch of changes in federal policy. For one thing, we changed our system of agricultural supports from one that paid farmers not to grow food to one that paid farmers to grow as much food as they possibly can, and rewarded farmers for producing enormous amounts of food. That accounted for the rise in the number of calories in the food supply.
What kind of food did we encourage farmers to grow?
Oh, corn and soybeans. You know, the basic commodities, mm-hmm. Of processed foods and animal feed. And those increases resulted in an increase in the number of calories in the food supply from 3,200 in the early 1980s until to 3,900 by the year 2000, an increase of 700 calories available in the food supply. Now, if you're in the food business trying to sell food to people, and you're trying to do that in an environment in which there are 3,900 calories available for every man, woman, and tiny little baby in the country, you've got a very competitive business to deal with, and you're going to have to compete to sell your product. But then another thing that happened at about that time was a change in the way that Wall Street evaluated corporations. Up until about that time, Wall Street loved blue chip stocks. You never hear about blue chip stocks anymore, the ones that gave long, slow return on investment. What happened in the early 1980s was the advent of the shareholder value movement, in which shareholders began to demand higher immediate returns on investment.
Something with lots of calories in it, right?
Well, the result of that...
Just kind of kidding. I was just thinking of...
Well, sure. Yeah, I mean, the result of that was that corporations not only had to make a profit, but they had to grow their profits. They had to expand their profit waistline, to use your metaphor, every 90 days. And for food companies, this was especially difficult because they were already trying to sell their products in an environment in which food was hugely overabundant. 3,900 calories is roughly twice what the country needs on average. And now they had to not only make a profit, but grow their profits every 90 days. So food companies began to look for new ways to sell food. And I thought your description of the car wash, your car wash experience, was the most beautiful example of that, an absolutely perfect example. Food is everywhere. You didn't used to be able to buy food at car washes. Or I like to ask the question, when did it become okay to eat in bookstores? Or libraries.
Or everywhere.
These are everywhere. And you, by not buying or by not buying those products, were existing in an enormous amount of self-control. I was particularly interested in the peanut butter cookies, which were out there, and presumably you didn't have to pay for them.
No, they were sitting there. It was terrifying.
Yeah, it's pretty hard for most people to resist picking up a free peanut butter cookie. If you like peanut butter cookies and if they look like they're going to be pretty good, you're going to pick them up.
Oh, they look so good, Marion.
And you forced yourself not to. That's terrible.
Well, the other part of that story was also true. You know, I was thinking about calories because I was thinking about the show. I was reading your book. And so I was aware. You know, I was actually thinking about calories. Now, had I been thinking about pruning the hedge or paying the bills or, you know, fixing a flat tire or any of the other things that we have to think about in growing through life, I might have easily succumbed to half of those calories. Give me some of that and some of that, and I'll take the donut and I'll take the cookies and I may as well buy some ice cream. And I could have consumed enough calories just not thinking to, you know, supply a whole army on its long march.
Sure. I mean, I'm bored, therefore I'll eat. And especially if it tastes good. And there's a lot of really good-tasting food around. So that environment, I think, plus a deregulation of marketing that occurred about the same time, allowed food companies or encouraged food companies or even forced food companies to start trying to figure out ways to increase the sales of their products. And in the United States, they did that by putting food everywhere, by serving it in larger portions, because food is cheap and they're federal reasons for that, and making it generally available, and also creating a social environment in which it became completely socially acceptable to eat all day long in very large portions.
At the car wash.
At the car wash. And so this occurred without anybody really paying very much attention to it. It happened below the radar of critical thinking. And all of a sudden, people found themselves eating more than they had in the past, eating more frequently, which for many people increases the number of calories they're taking in, eating in larger portions, which is sufficient to explain rising weight levels. If I had one thing that I could teach everybody, it would be that larger portions have more calories. It's not intuitively obvious. You really have to think about it. And so all of these resulted in a society in which people started eating more. There's tons of evidence that people are eating more now than they did in the early 1980s, and much, much less compelling evidence that people are less active.
And let's go back up a little bit and talk about when we started processing all of those basic commodities into foods. We look for ways, I think, if you're a manufacturer, you look for ways of getting the most from the least, which is to say getting as much money as you can out of the raw materials that you're working with. And to do that, you process the food. And as you said earlier, I believe, when you process food like that, you lose the nutrients. Why is that?
Well, because the easiest example is the changing of whole wheat to white flour. You remove the bran and the germ, and that's where the main nutrients are in the wheat grain. And that happens as part of it. I mean, the more processing that a food goes through, the more some of the essential elements are taken out of it or cooked out of it or heated out of it or pummeled out of it, and the less its nutritional value, and the greater the proportion of calories to the number of nutrients.
So the processed food we eat, would be fair to say that, is high in calories and low in nutrients, and thus it would kind of fit in with Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, which is cheap food isn't, because it really isn't cheap, is it?
Not in the long run. But it certainly seems that way. And also, you have to take government policy into consideration.
Ooh, that's our next subject, government policy, which is the politics of calories. Folks, this is The Food Chain. Michael Olson with Marion Nestle, author of Why Calories Count. You'd like to talk with Marion, you're invited to. Pick up your phone today and call 831-479-1080. 479-1080, right back. Do stay tuned. Well, ladies and gentlemen, calories are the fuel for the fire. Our body burns them, and thus we have energy to survive and prosper. But the excess calories we consume are not burned because the body doesn't need them. So what does it do with them? It stores them away as fat. And thus, when you look around America and a good part of the developed world, you see a lot of people who have stored too many excess calories. And so that is the subject of today, why calories count. Our guest, Marion Nestle, from Science to Politics, and that's what we're trying to get at, is the politics of calories. It's an election year. Politics is everything this year, so we're going to talk about what government has to do with all of this. Marion?
Always delighted to talk about that. The easiest way to talk about how the government is involved in calories is through agricultural supports, which support the growing of commodity crops like corn and soybeans, and do not support the growing of fruits and vegetables, which the Department of Agriculture considers specialty crops.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the middle of developing a new farm bill, even as we speak. Congress is dealing with it. And there's a lot of hope among the alternative agriculture community that maybe Congress will do something to try to promote fruit and vegetable production as a means to convert our agricultural system to one that supports healthy foods rather than the kind of foods that it currently supports.
Can we back up just a little bit on this? We see where the government is supporting the production, the overproduction of these basic crops, which we then manufacture and produce and turn out in fancy bags and of high calorie food and low nutrient content. But doesn't the government have it in its own best interest to have lots of cheap calories on the marketplace?
Yeah, it's hard to argue against cheap food. Because a cheap food supply, and I'm not going to, a cheap food supply means that everybody in the country has access to food, whether they're rich or poor. So that's very, very good in theory. But we've ended up with a skewed system in which the cost of junk food, if you want to put it that way, and I love using that word, is cheaper than the cost of fruits and vegetables. And there's really pretty good evidence for that. If you look at the index price of various food commodities since the early 1980s, and the Department of Commerce produces these figures, it shows that the relative price of fruits and vegetables has increased by 40% since 1980, whereas the relative price of sodas has gone down by 30%. There's something wrong with that picture. If you go into McDonald's with $5, you can buy five hamburgers or one salad. There's something wrong with that picture. And a lot of it has to do with treating fruits and vegetables as if they were specialty crops. I'm a nutritionist. I'm always telling people to eat their veggies. Those are specialty crops that don't receive the kind of government support on many, many levels that other kinds of commodities get.
Now, do they have a lot of calories in them? I mean,
fruits and vegetables are mostly for the most part, are mostly water.
Mm-hmm.
So they're low in calories and very high in nutrients for the number of calories that they have. And they have many factors that promote health. And eating a diet that has a lot of vegetables and fruit in it is associated with the, you know, very good health outcomes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know that, but can they supply us with enough calories to lead an active outside life?
Absolutely. Okay. Vegetarians do just fine.
Okay.
You know, vegetarians are among the healthiest people in the United States. They have no trouble maintaining calories. Can they gain weight on a vegetarian diet? Absolutely. Depends on what they eat. If they eat a lot of rice and beans and throw a lot of oil on it, they too can take in more calories than they need. But most vegetarians are pretty healthy, and it's highly recommended to eat that way.
So they get their calories from grains?
Sure.
Okay.
Or beans, grains, and vegetables.
Okay.
And they eat a greater volume of food, and they have to eat a greater volume of food in order to get the to maintain calorie balance, and that turns out to work just fine.
And the government, then, has been encouraging production of cheap calories and not encouraging the production of fruits and vegetables.
Oh, it's even worse than that. It actively discourages fruit and vegetable production. For example, any commodity producer who gets subsidies for growing corn or soybeans is not permitted to grow fruits or vegetables. It's not allowed.
What?
Yeah, that's the Farm Bill. I taught a course on the Farm Bill last semester. It was revelatory. I mean, you sit there and you think, how did this happen? How did that happen? How did food stamps get into the Farm Bill? I could go on and on.
So what we have then out in farm country are acres and acres and acres of one thing or another, corn or soybeans, and no fruits and vegetables.
Well, where you live, there are fruit. You know, where you live, there are acres and acres and acres of vegetables, because California is growing specialty crops.
Mm-hmm. But these crops are not subsidized. So under under the Farm Bill, out in farm country, what we have are essentially a few crops growing. Plants that have high calorie content and very low nutrient content, and the government says, that's all you can grow. That's all we're going to pay for, right?
That's right.
So
that's why so many groups are trying to change the Farm Bill, and good luck to them.
Mm-hmm. So why is it difficult to change the politics? What are the political forces that lead us in this direction of calories?
Well, I like to say every election campaign begins in Iowa, and I have trouble imagining a candidate for president going to Iowa and saying, the first thing that I'm going to do when I become president is change the agricultural system so that it supports fruit and vegetable production. Somehow, I can't see that happening. I mean, it's inconceivable that something like that could happen. Nobody can get elected that way, and because we have this extraordinarily corrupt system of paying for election campaigns, the people who can throw the most money at candidates get to call the tune.
Would that explain why Monsanto's Michael Taylor has become the nation's food safety czar?
Oh, I think that's too simplistic, actually. I wouldn't call Michael Taylor Monsanto's man. I really wouldn't. Yeah, I would not. Yes, he worked for Monsanto, but he's done some other things that were not in Monsanto's interest. And he's in the FDA now because he was the person who got the food safety things passed in USDA in the 1990s, and they thought he could do it.
Okay.
For FDA now. I think he's more complicated than that. Not simple at all. So I think, yes, the revolving door is a huge problem in government, and that's government officials who go and work for industry and then come back.
And then we're going to have to take a quick break, Marion. Right back. Folks, the phone number is 479-1080. Talk with Marion. We're going to go to the phones when we return. Hey, welcome back out there. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Michael Olson with Marion Nestle, author of Why Calories Count, From Science to Politics. And calories do count. It's pretty obvious that they've been counting us. And they've been counting quite a few of us. If you take a look around, we need calories to get by in the world. But if we eat too many of them, our body just stores them away. And thus, we become overweight. And so we're coming to grips with calories, talking about why they do count, and especially the politics of calories and how over the past 20 years, government has really been focusing its efforts on growing more and more and more calorie-rich, nutrient-poor crops. Is that a fair way of saying it, Marion?
Oh, I think it is. Absolutely. You know, our entire agricultural system is set up to support one kind of food rather than another. But I wanted to add something else in about the way our food system works, and that is the makers of processed food have kind of maxed out on sales in the United States. And for the last year or so, I've been tracking where the profits in food companies have been coming from. And invariably, they're coming from developing countries, third world countries, India, China, mm-hmm. and all the rest of them. And this includes Coke, Pepsi, McDonald's, Nestle, no relation, Domino's Pizza. I mean, every major food company that you could think of is reporting growth in profits from sales overseas, which means that we're exporting our particular system of poor food, I think.
Yeah, I just saw a piece in the Wall Street Journal about what good times Coca-Cola are having in the world economy. So I guess you're pretty much right on that. Folks, we're going to go to the phones right now. So if you'd like to talk with Marion Nestle, pick up your phones and join us. We're at 831-479-1080, 479-1080. Let's talk with Jack. Jack, welcome to the Food Chain.
Hello. I think one of the things you're missing is the issue of storability, you know, the fresh, nutritious food. Not only is it more labor-intensive to grow than your grain crops, but its storability is much less. It requires a lot of processing in order to keep it edible. It requires constant refrigeration, freezing, that kind of thing. And, you know, that's one of the issues that I think you're kind of overlooking as far as that goes. I mean, it's the nice thing about the grain-based processed foods is that you know, you can keep in your pantry for years and they're still edible. They still have nutritious qualities to them. But of course, you know, it's up to the person to make the decision. do I grab the candy bar or do I grab the peel the carrot? Of course, you have to open the package on the candy bar. You have to peel or wash the carrot. But the problem.
That's okay. A real interesting. Well, can you let's hold that onto that thought for just a minute, Jack. I once did a radio show on the ingredients contained in Hostess Twinkies. and you can put a Twinkie on the shelf for like 29 years and still eat it. But what you said, Jack, raises a concern with me, and that is to eat those things and actually think we're getting good nutrition out of them. Marion, are we?
Oh, you're getting some. You're getting calories and some nutrients, but is that the best way to eat? I don't think so. I mean, one of the things we know is that the best, the people who are healthiest are the ones who include a lot of fruits and vegetables in their diet. The fruits and vegetables don't have to be fresh. They can be frozen. Frozen fruits and vegetables are a greatly underappreciated contribution to the diet. But what I heard in the caller's comments were a couple of points that I think are worth talking about. I mean, he's absolutely right that these things are shelf-stable and that companies can buy the ingredients when the ingredients are cheap and then use them when they need them, and they last on the shelf for a long time. But we're in a position where we really can eat better than that. But the other point that the caller made that I thought really needs some addressing is the business about how this is really a matter of personal responsibility, and it's completely up to you. And you gave an example of that in your discussion of what happened at the car wash, that there was all this food around and you have this great strength of character and you were able to resist it.
But only because I was reading Marion Nestle's Why Calories Count. How's that for a plug?
No. I mean, we have so much evidence now that cues in the food environment trigger eating behavior, one of which is just having a plate of cookies in front of you. I mean, there have been studies that show that the further food is away from you, the less of it you eat. The larger the portion, the more of it you eat. Almost nobody can cope with large portions without eating too much. And that's why I keep talking to restaurants and saying, can't you give a price break if I order a smaller portion? I mean, one of the things I learned from doing the research on this book was that as you get older, your metabolism slows down. And it's no wonder that everybody who's middle-aged complains about how hard it is to maintain their weight. Their metabolism has slowed down so much they can't eat as many calories. I think it's the dirtiest trick about getting older. You can't eat as much as you used to. It's not fair.
Well, you probably can, but you're going to have to pay for it. Folks, so really quickly, Jack, go ahead.
Yeah, I just want to say I agree. You know, I think it's more of a cultural issue that people need to be taught that, you know what, I mean, it's better, it's cooler.
And it's out of time.
Eat the fresh vegetable.
Right back. Do stay tuned. Hold on, Jack. We'll be right back. So much to talk about in so little time. Marion Nestle, what can politics do to save us from all those calories?
Well, we can write our congressional representatives and get them to fix things, but I think we can join the food movement. You know, there's this enormous national food movement that's aimed at improving the quality of food for people, improving the accessibility of food to people who don't have access to it or can't afford it, farmers markets, CSAs, organic foods, local foods, the whole works. All of those things, and school food, all of those things are making an enormous difference in the lives of individuals. And I think this is grassroots democracy.
Amen to that.
People by the people, for the people, and let's have more of it.
Amen to that. Jack, you want to finish up?
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to teach people that making the right food choices is a good thing, and that it's cool to choose fresh food over processed food. However, when you consider changing the agricultural practices of the Midwest, I think you're being a little unrealistic once you consider the fact that all fresh produce needs to be kept refrigerated or frozen, the costs of production, a much higher labor costs, much higher.
But Jack, we didn't always eat like this. We used to have real food in the Midwest. I know I was there. Thank you very much for that call. Let's go quickly to.
Let me just throw one thing in here. All of these new people who are going into farming in the Midwest and elsewhere are looking at a different kind of agricultural system. I think they're the hope of the future.
But they're not getting any government money. Eric.
Yes, hello.
Fire away. You have a couple minutes. Hurry.
I will be attending Indiana Purdue University of Indianapolis.
Good for you.
And I wanted to make a quick mention that this is actually a monetary issue. And so I'm actually writing an academic research paper on the subject. And this goes back to the conditions that happened economically in our country and the Depression and the FDR New Deal laws that came out at that time dealing with the starvation. And at the end of World War II, 60% of our country was agrarian, and now it's only 4%. So what happened in 71 when we went off the gold standard is that the commodities were monetized. And that's where the patent laws and Monsanto and the attorneys and all this stuff spawns from. And so the packaging of foods, everything, it's all connected to ag and the sciences. And so there was a lot of good intentions behind it.
Eric, politics started it. Can politics end it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I believe so, but it's just a matter of being on balance and understanding it. And it's sort of a simplistic reply to it would be, it was the best of times and the worst of times. It just depends on how you look at the situation in the circumstances in the moment of history.
Thank you very much, Eric. Marion Nessel, author of Why Calories Count, Can Politics Fix What Politics Started?
Absolutely, and I see it being fixed on the grassroots level all the time. We just need more of it, more people getting involved in the food movement.
You and our friends and neighbors, we're going to fix it, right?
That's right.
Well, Marion Nessel, thank you so much for joining us. It's been 10 years, too long. It won't be that long next time. Why Calories Count is the book. Take it next time you go to the car wash and save yourself a whole bunch of calories. Thank you all for tuning in. And remember, Michael Olson's third law of the food chain, cheap food isn't. Thank you.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Show with Michael Olson. If your friends missed the show today, tell them to log on to the radio page at www.metrofarm.com for a listen. Now go out and find some food with a farmer's face on it and live.